The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, Science's online news editor, is here to fill us in on some recent stories on our daily news site. Well, Dave, today it appears to be testosterone, folic acid, and glowing kittens. Where to possibly begin?
Well, I guess we'll begin with testosterone. That's something at least a lot of the men in the audience, I'm sure, will be interested in. And this story is about whether fatherhood decreases testosterone. As our original headline read, does fatherhood make men wimpy? That's a bit of an overstatement. But the general question is, does being a father have an effect on a man's hormone levels? And the reason this question came to the fore is because previous studies had shown that men that are fathers tended to have lower testosterone than men that aren't fathers. But in this new study, researchers wanted to see, well, what's the cause and effect here? Do men with lower testosterone, just are they more likely to become fathers? Or is it the other way around? Do men tend to have higher testosterone, but then they become fathers, and something about fatherhood lowers their testosterone?
And so how would you go about separating cause and effect in something like that?
Well, luckily, in this new study, researchers had access to a very large data set from a trial that's been going on in the Philippines, which has been looking at hundreds of men and women over there. And they followed 600 men from the trial. They had first tested these men in 2005. They had taken some saliva samples from them in which they can actually test testosterone levels. And then they sampled the men again about 4 years later. And it turns out that in the intervening time, some of these men had gotten married and had children. And what the researchers noticed is that the men who had become fathers had about a 26 to 34% decrease in testosterone levels. So this seemed to suggest to the researchers that having children in itself is enough to bring testosterone levels down.
And I guess it wasn't just having children. There was something about the level of commitment, too.
Well, the study also showed that testosterone levels were lowest in men who reported spending the greatest amount of time caring for their children, which
is almost like a dose response.
Exactly.
Effect.
And that's really led the researchers to conclude that this drop in testosterone may actually be very important biologically and even evolutionarily. The idea is that high testosterone levels are often associated with aggression and competition. And whereas high testosterone level may be good when you're single, it may be make you more competitive and maybe perhaps make you more attracted to females. Once you start having kids, actually high testosterone levels can be a detriment. Other studies have shown that men with high testosterone tend to have more marital problems, that they get divorced more often, also that they're less likely to pay attention to the screams of a baby, which would be very bad in a relationship if the father was constantly ignoring his screaming infant. So what these researchers are suggesting here is that these low testosterone levels may make dads calmer, may make them more caring, may make them more likely to stick around. Of course, this is all speculation at this point, but at the very least, they can conclude that fatherhood does seem to have this dramatic effect on men's hormone levels.
And next, some potential folly in folic acid supplements.
Well, right, Stuart. This next study is about, well, it's about to be very controversial, potentially. It basically suggests that folic acid, which a lot of women take to prevent birth defects, may have some negative consequences. But before I get too far into this, I want to say that the experts have a lot of questions about this study. So got to take these findings with a bit of a grain of salt, although they are very provocative. Basically, you may or may not know, Stuart, that a lot of women in the U.S. take folic acid. It's actually, not only do they take it, but a lot of our food is actually supplemented, especially in the U.S., but also in other countries, is actually supplemented with folic acid.
Well, what exactly is folic acid?
Well, Stuart, folic acid is a vitamin, and we consume it naturally when we eat leafy vegetables. That has a lot of folic acid, or folate, as it's sometimes called. But not everybody gets enough. And a few years ago, doctors noticed that women who are deficient in folic acid had a greater chance of having children with birth defects, especially birth defects of the spine, skull, and brain. But that those that doubled their recommended dose of folic acid were about 40 to 50% less likely to have children with these defects. And ever since then, the U.S. has fortified most of its grains with folate, and since 1998, and actually a lot of other countries do this as well. So it's really become a standard part of our diet because doctors said, you know, it's so important for the health of newborn children.
And so there's a new study with a mouse model that is maybe looking at this differently?
Exactly. Well, the mouse model the researchers used, these mice were genetically predisposed to giving birth to embryos with neural tube defects. And these are the type of defects that are also seen in human babies of mothers that have this folate deficiency. And what the researchers did was they supplemented the rodent's diet with folate, and they gave them similar concentrations to people that are taking either moderate or very high levels of folate. And what the researchers saw, which was really surprising, is that in one of these mouse lines, the mice that were taking folate, their offspring actually had a 20 to 60% increase in neural tube defects. And another strain of mice that were taking high levels of folate actually had a lot of miscarriages. They lost a lot of their embryos before these embryos were born.
Wow. We'll talk about the law of unintended consequences.
Right. And so again, big heaps of caution here, because what experts are saying is this is intriguing, definitely something that should be looked more at. But there are a lot of things that happen in mice that don't happen in people, and especially when it comes to birth defects. For example, thalidomide, which has developed such a bad reputation for causing birth defects in humans, is actually perfectly safe in mice, doesn't cause birth defects at all. So we could be having an opposite situation here, whereas folate potentially causing birth defects in mice, whereas it doesn't in humans. There's also a whole host of other mutations that cause birth defects in mice that don't produce the same problems in humans. And you'll have to remember, again, that the mice used in this study were genetically modified to really have these genetic defects, to have offspring that have these defects in the first place. So you're really dealing with a lot of variables here, and it's hard to make a firm conclusion about what it all means. What the researchers are saying is, you know, it's intriguing, should be studied further, and don't go out right now and throw all your folate down the toilet.
Maybe eat those leafy vegetables.
Exactly.
And finally, the glowing kittens, and something, I guess, with relevance to the AIDS epidemic.
Well, right, Stuart. There's actually, believe it or not, there's two AIDS epidemics in this world. One that affects humans, and that's caused by HIV. But there's also something very akin to the AIDS epidemic in cats, and it's caused by a virus known as FIV, or feline immunodeficiency virus. And we can't catch FIV from cats, and they can't catch HIV from us, but the two viruses are actually very similar. They're both known as lentiviruses. And researchers think they understand why cats can catch FIV and humans don't. They think it boils down to a protein known as TRIM-CYP. And this protein is present in humans, but not present in cats. And it seems to be involved in recognizing the outer shell of these lentiviruses. So researchers have said, I wonder if the fact that cats lack this TRIM-CYP protein is the reason they're susceptible to FIV. But obviously not a very easy thing to test. You can't just put a bunch of TRIM-CYP in cats and see if they're resistant to FIV.
And that, I guess, is where the glowing kittens come in.
That's exactly where the glowing kittens come in. It turns out you can. And there was a way to do this before, actually. And researchers have actually created what they've called transgenic cats before, which is basically creating a genetically modified cat that has new genes that you put into it. But it was a very laborious process. It was called a somatic cell nuclear transfer. And if you remember all the way back to Dolly the sheep being cloned, this is basically the same process. You replace the nucleus of an egg cell with a nucleus that contains some genes that you want. You put it back in the egg. You put the egg in the mother, and you hope that it leads to offspring. Well, it's a very inefficient process. It only has about a 3% success rate. And you can imagine if you're in a laboratory and you really want to study something as important as FIV or HIV, you want a much higher success rate. So in this new study, the researchers actually took advantage of the fact that these lentiviruses can infect cats. And so they took a lentivirus and they genetically modified it so that it contained this TRIM-CYP gene, so they could get this TRIM-CYP gene into cats. And they also added a gene for a fluorescent protein. And that way they would know which cats had actually become infected with the virus. And then what they did was they took a bunch of egg cells from female cats, they mixed it up with the virus so the virus would infect the egg cells. They allowed sperm to fertilize the egg, and then they put these eggs in female cats.
And what happens when you do that?
And what happens when you do that is, first of all, you have a much higher success rate than you had with somatic cell nuclear transfer. The researchers had a success rate of about 23% versus 3%. But you also end up with a lot of glowing kittens, and you actually see a picture of a couple glowing kittens on the website. Now, that may sound cute, but it is evidence that these cats actually have this new gene, this gene for TRIMSIP, in their bodies.
Okay, so they've got the protein in their bodies. Now, how do you make the connection with FIV from that?
So what the researchers did was they took blood cells from the genetically modified kittens and they tried to infect the cells with FIV. And lo and behold, FIV did not replicate well in these cells. Now, the next step, which they haven't done yet, is actually to try to infect these kittens with FIV to see if actually their whole bodies are resistant and not just their blood cells. But if it's successful, it's a very important advance for science because it suggests a new way to combat FIV and potentially even HIV in humans.
Okay, Dave, well, what other stories are you looking at for the news site?
Well, Stuart, for Science Now, we've got a story about why some people are much more susceptible to the flu than others, and indeed why some people are killed by the flu while others aren't. Also a story about how snails use birds as taxis. And for Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about the future of NASA, what is happening to space exploration over the next decade or so. Also plagiarism in the Congo. And finally on Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science. This week's Science Live is about neuroscience in the courtroom. What role is neuroscience playing in convicting criminals? So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.